Tuesday, January 9th, 2018. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado. You know, we get together every weekday, and we talk sports, and we try to bring you a dose of common sense. There might be just a tiny bit of sarcasm mixed in here or there, and we are very happy to have you with us today. Hey, we survived Monday, and I know that might not sound like all that much. Like, we didn't do all that much except not die on Monday, but it is our first full week back after the holidays. So there's something to be said for getting that first Monday out of the way, isn't there? So we're just going to take that as a positive. Baby steps, people. We've got a long week ahead. We know that. Getting back to work, getting back to things after the holidays, baby steps. Let's just keep plugging away one day at a time, right? Sounded very cliche, kind of like things you'd say in a post-NFL press conference or something, didn't it? If you would like to contact us, and we would love to hear from you, feel free to hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or head over to Facebook or Twitter. You can find us over there as well. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. We would love to interact with you. Maybe you've got a question. Maybe you've got a suggestion. Whatever it might be, feel free to reach out. We would love to hear from you. Hey, we have a lot to get to on this Tuesday morning. Of course, the College Football National Championship took place last night, and you know we are going to have to dive full on into that. Plus, we are now down to basically the Elite Eight in the NFL. Just eight teams left in the entire NFL. And you know, we're going to get to the previews for that divisional round of the playoffs a little bit later in the week. But right now, here is a question for you. What is out there right now that could possibly trip up each of these remaining eight teams and just kind of make them say, oh, we have a lot of things to get to on this Tuesday morning, and we've got to dive in right now. Hey, not sure if you saw this. The 2018 College Football Hall of Fame class was announced yesterday. You know, 13 players and coaches are going to be inducted in New York City next December. And included in this year's class are former coaches, of course, longtime Virginia Tech coach Frank Beamer. Very, very good choice there. Longtime Texas coach Mack Brown is getting in. We have Miami safety Ed Reed. I mean, that's one of the all-time greats. Georgia Tech wide receiver Calvin Johnson. Michigan cornerback Charles Woodson. That's a pretty impressive class right there. Just those three guys and those two coaches. That's an amazing class right there. That's not all. We've got a few more guys. Also included are Rice running back Trevor Cobb. He played in the late 80s, early 90s. Penn State quarterback Kerry Collins played from 91 to 94. Montana quarterback Dave Dickinson played in the early 90s as well. Illinois linebacker Dana Howard. Temple running back Paul Palmer. You might remember Paul Palmer got a little bit of Heisman buzz in the mid to late 80s. Pretty exciting player. Georgia offensive tackle Matt Stinchcomb. Nebraska offensive lineman Aaron Taylor. And former Austin College and Northwest Missouri State coach Mel Tiersma? Okay. Do you see something kind of weird here? Like, I know we talk a lot about Hall of Fames these days, and we've talked about it recently on The Dose. Guys getting into the Hall of Fame, who gets in, who doesn't, who gets their number retired, who doesn't. But do you see why, and I swear, I'm not picking on these guys, do you see why the Pro Football Hall of Fame can't just let anyone in? It kind of waters down the product, right? Like, do you see why people that aren't the best of the best of the best might get skipped? I know that this day in this age of sports, we are very eager to jam everyone into every Hall of Fame, retire everyone's number, put them up in our stadium ring of fame, retire their number, get all that stuff, get the bus set for Canton. Like, we want everybody in, everybody memorialized as soon as we possibly can do it, right? I don't even know some of these guys. You're telling me they are the best of the best of the best. And I follow college football. Like, I even watch some small school stuff. I'm not trying to pick on some of these small school guys, but you're telling me, like, when I look at Hall of Fames and when I look at what credentials should be there to gain entry into the Hall of Fame, like, I can't tell the story without you. Like, I know that there's some players, maybe in the NFL, that got into the Hall of Fame and they had a short career. Take someone like Gale Sayers. Take someone like Terrell Davis. And we say, well, they had a short career. Take someone like who is coming up right now. Tony Boselli down in Jacksonville. Short careers. Didn't stay healthy. But can you tell the story of the NFL without them? I don't think you can. Like, I can't tell the full story of the NFL without Gale Sayers. He was that impactful. I can't tell the story of the NFL without Terrell Davis. He was that impactful. Let's say we're telling the story of college football. There are so many players that have impacted college football. But are you telling me that Dana Howard, linebacker at Illinois, has to be in that story? I don't even remember Dana Howard. Trevor Cobb? Dave Dickinson? I remember Paul Palmer. I would say that he is at least on the national scene. Like, it would be a little bit harder to tell the story without him. He was in the Heisman race. Very, very explosive player. Put Temple a little bit on the map for Temple. Matt Stinchcomb was pretty solid. Aaron Taylor is pretty solid at Nebraska. Some of these guys I don't know. And again, like I said, I'm not trying to pick on these guys that I don't know their names. I'm just saying, you're telling me we couldn't tell the story. I didn't know their names to begin with. Sometimes you have to kind of rein back on how many guys you let in. I know the arguments for this guy has to get in and this guy has to get in. I understand all that. I really do. But sometimes we kind of have to rein that back in, don't we? We can't let everybody in. If you let everybody in, it just waters down the product. It just makes it a little less important when everybody gets in. Everybody gets a ribbon. You know, the Chicago Bears named their new head coach yesterday. Of course, they fired John Fox after the kind of weird run that he had back there. Never did really get anything going. And John Fox has always kind of built something wherever he's gone. Never really could get Chicago going. But yesterday, the Chicago Bears named Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator Matt Nagy as their new head coach. You know, they wanted an offensive-minded guy. They want an offensive mind to work with young quarterback Mitchell Trubisky. You could see this year, Trubisky has a lot of raw talent. No question about that. But I think you could also see he didn't have a whole lot of things being taught to him where you were seeing him improve as a quarterback. Every single week, it kind of seemed like his hands were tied. It kind of seemed like he wasn't making progress. In fact, he was regressing the longer the season went. Early on, he was kind of just getting by on guts and toughness and just trying to make a play. By the end of it, they had kind of reined him in so much that you're like, he doesn't even look like the guy we saw at the beginning of the year, does he? So they wanted to go get an offensive guy, and that's what they got. They are hoping in Chicago for that Sean McVay kind of revival. I've got news for you right now. Just throwing this out there. Every team that fired their coach is looking for the next Sean McVay. Let's just get that on the table right now, because that's what everyone's going to say. Well, you know, we're just kind of looking for that next Sean McVay. So's everyone. You know what helps a lot? If you have a lot of talent on the roster, then your next guy might be Sean McVay. Let's not kid ourselves. That Los Angeles Rams team had some talent. They just never did anything with the talent until McVay got there. Everyone's going to be looking for the next Sean McVay. Okay, so Chicago goes and hires Matt Nagy. They're hoping to find that guy that can generate some points. So who do they go get? The guy that couldn't generate a single second half point against the Tennessee Titans at home on Saturday in a playoff game. He's going to be the guy to build this franchise up the right way, right? That's what's going to happen. Like, sometimes you do wonder what goes on in these meetings, don't you? Like, everyone's sitting around. You know what? I think Matt Nagy's our guy. Really bright offensive mind. Really smart guy. I think he could come in. He could get Mitch just playing top-notch quarterback. I mean, he's done some good things with Alex Smith. And then after the playoff game, like, they're watching the playoff game going, they haven't scored a single point in the second half against the Titans? The worst team in the NFL that got into the playoffs? They can't get a second half point at home, no less. I don't know. I mean, I guess that just makes sense for what we see in the NFL these days, doesn't it? Chicago Bears got their man. Not sure if their man's the right guy or not, but they're hoping to get the next Sean McVay. Hey, coming back, we have got to get to that crazy overtime college football national championship game that we watched last night. It was a bizarre night down in Atlanta, and we have got to get to all of that right after this. Okay, so we kind of knew that this game was going to be a little bit different right from the start, didn't we? I mean, as soon as the game gets started and President Trump walks out onto the field, like, it all felt a little surreal, didn't it? Like, I'm watching the game and I know he's the president, but you see him walking, he's like this big cartoon character walking out there, and you're like, is this just going to be one of those nights? Yes. Yes, it is going to be one of those nights. And I'll say this, it was a very, very entertaining game. It was a good finish to the season. You were on the edge of your seat, especially late. It started a little slow, but the Alabama versus Georgia College Football National Championship. It was an exciting game. It was an exciting finish. You know, it started off, like I said, a little bit slow. Georgia turns it over on its first possession. And then we saw Alabama probably have the best drive that they had with Jalen Hurts under center on the very first possession of the game for them. They went with a lot of screens. They went with some quarterback power plays. But they drive down the field and they miss a field goal. Okay. You could see there were jitters early on both sides. You could see a lot of emotion, a lot of pushing and shoving, a lot of chippiness, which did continue for the most part throughout the game. But you saw it especially early because there's just so much emotion in these young players. We saw Georgia having success, especially in the first half, with some misdirection stuff. We saw them having success with the quick short passes over the middle. Alabama playing that man-to-man two-deep zone, and Jake Fromm was going over the middle, and he was attacking them down the field. It seemed like Sony Michel just kept coming up with big plays in the first half on those third and long. Third and long, draw, he's very patient, he's waiting for his blocks, he's finding his spots. Georgia was getting the better of it in the first half. You know, Alabama's offense was just completely anemic in the first half. Georgia was daring Jalen Hurts to throw, and he just couldn't do it. We saw in the first half, Georgia outgains Alabama 223-94. Georgia has a 13-0 lead right before halftime. When I'm watching this, I'm thinking that they actually probably should have been up a little more. Like, they should have been up more than just two scores because they had dominated the game early. As we go to halftime, Georgia up 13-0. I thought they should have been up by a little bit more, and you wondered, would Alabama make the move at quarterback? Because Jalen Hurts was struggling. He was struggling badly. Just can't throw the ball downfield. He's not that guy. He just doesn't look to make those throws, and he struggled. Halftime show was kind of interesting, I thought, though. Halftime show, Kendrick Lamar comes out. I mean, I liked the show. It was kind of stripped down. There were no dancing sharks, or it was just kind of a simple show. Came out, did three or four songs. But here's the thing that was kind of striking me at halftime of this game. Like, I was trying to imagine those old school Alabama and Georgia fans watching Kendrick Lamar at halftime. You know what I mean? Not like the middle-aged ones, like old school. You know what I'm saying? Okay, fine. I'm trying to say like some good old boy Southern fried racist. That's what I'm trying to say. Because you know they were there. Like, you know they were at this game. They're up in the stands going, you know, I remember back in the days when it was just a marching band down there on the field with a Confederate flag on the doggone drum. What in tarnation's going on out there? What's all this yelling about? Like, you know that was happening in the stands during halftime, right? So, third quarter starts, and Nick Saban makes the move. He goes with the freshman quarterback, takes out Jalen Hurts, the guy who has been the starter for the last 2 years, goes with the freshman, Tua Tagovailoa, and this is a kid who can throw it a little bit. And you saw him start to warm up in the third quarter. It was 13-0. He drives down the field, puts up a touchdown. It's 13-7. And you're like, hey, Alabama looked different on that drive. They had a different look to them on that drive with the freshman quarterback. Tagovailoa, strong kid, strong arm, much stronger arm than I thought that he had. But as soon as they scored to close the gap 13-7, Georgia comes right back with an 80-yard touchdown pass from Fromm to Hardman. We have that here from ESPN.
Third down right here for Fromm. Delivers under pressure. Downfield. Caught! Hardman! A foot race! Escapes and scores!
And you're like, it's 20-7, Georgia. This game might be over. Like, it just isn't Alabama's night. Everything that Bama is doing, Georgia seems to have an answer for. But here was the thing that I started to notice as the game wore on. It seemed like Georgia was the quicker team. Georgia was the faster team. Georgia was using a lot of misdirection and a lot of speed. It seemed like Alabama was the stronger team. Alabama was the tougher team. And if I was comparing this game to a fight, Georgia was racking up points with the jab and the jab and the jab. And Alabama started to land body blows. And it seemed like the later the game got, the body blows had started to rack up and Georgia was starting to stagger a little bit. Don't get me wrong, it wasn't all at once, but you especially started to see their offense fail to gain yards, fail to even get first downs the later the game got. You wonder if those body blows were paying off. And you did wonder if Georgia went a little conservative late. A lot of handoffs. Where was the quick passing game from Jake Fromm that was having some success early? They kind of got away from that, kind of trying to milk some clock. Alabama got the ball right back late. They drive down inside the 10 in regulation, have to go for it on fourth down. And I thought on the touchdown, I thought Tagovailoa might have got a little lucky on the fourth down touchdown pass.
Tagovailoa, plenty of time, surveying the field, fires end zone, touchdown! Calvin Ridley finally makes an impact.
You know, he throws the pass, and there are two or three receivers in the area. I don't know if he knew where he's throwing it. He throws a bullet, and it found Calvin Ridley, and Alabama ties it up with about 4 minutes to play. I don't know if he planned it. I don't know if he knew where he was even throwing it. If you look from his view, there's just a cluster back there. He fires it in there. I'll give him that. He's got a strong arm, that kid. Georgia can't get a first down. The game is tied. Alabama takes it back with less than 3 minutes to play. They drive down the field. They've got the kick all lined up. They're going to win it in overtime. Except that they don't, because of course they don't. They miss the field goal and we go to overtime because, like I said, it was just kind of a surreal night. It was just kind of a weird night down in Atlanta. In overtime, Jake Fromm takes a big sack, forces Blankenship to kick a 51-yard field goal. Georgia takes a 23-20 lead. Now, I just want to stop right there for 1 second. 23-20. I am sitting there saying, on the dose yesterday, I predicted 23-17, Georgia wins it. If they can just hold here, I'm golden. On first down, Georgia's defense sacks the freshman for a 16-yard loss. I'm feeling great. I mean, Georgia might just win this thing. And then this happened.
Think about Loa trying to make up for it. Fires to the end zone. Touchdown! Alabama wins! The Crimson Tide will not be denied.
Hey, say what you want about Alabama. The Crimson Tide would not be denied. They find a way to win the college football national championship 26-23 in the All-SEC championship game. It was a great game. Like I said, started a little bit slow, a little bit of a weird night, a little bit strange. You thought Georgia was going to win it one time. You thought Alabama's going to win it late. I mean, it just went back and forth. You didn't know who was going to win it. Alabama has the comeback, puts it all together, finds a way to get the win. But here's the thing. Bigger than any of this, bigger than all the game and all the excitement, the president's there and people cussing at the president or whatever was going on, a lot of things going on, bigger than any of that is the fact that longtime listener and contributor to the Daily Dose, Big Rob, wins our college football bowl game pick'em contest. Yes, yes, congrats, Big Rob. It is well deserved. You know, he beat me by 34 points. I come in second. Actually, somehow Mrs. Dose comes in third. I don't even know how that happens. I might have to ask her how she managed to do that. You know, we're going to need to get Big Rob on the show as soon as possible. Outstanding picks. Well done, sir. You are a very, very deserving winner. We need to get him on anyways. I've got a lot of things I need to ask Big Rob about. Got a lot of questions for him. We're going to need to get him on. But he is the winner of our Daily Dose College Bowl Game Pick'em Contest. Okay, we have to talk a little bit about the NFL with just 8 teams remaining. What are the biggest things that those remaining teams need to make sure that they avoid? What could possibly make those remaining teams say,
when your cold goes from bad to worse, what do you make? A hot honey and lemon drink? That won't cut it. Try Strong Stuff, Day and Night Nurse. Its 24-hour relief can knock out your worst symptoms, helping you to sleep well. Day and Night Nurse capsules, only available at the pharmacy counter.
Refers to having capsules for day and night for cold and flu relief. Always read the label.
Hey, just a quick reminder, to make sure that you do any of that post-holiday shopping that you might need to do, over at lootcrate.com/dailydose. I know that you might have got some holiday money looking for something to buy, or maybe there's someone else on your list that you still need to get something for. Maybe you've got a birthday for someone coming up. Hey, I hate to even bring this up. I honestly do. Valentine's Day is coming. You might want to head over to Loot Crate, where you can find the latest pop culture collectibles featuring your favorite TV shows, movies, and video games. January's Loot Crate theme is called Discover. It features items from Rick and Morty, X-Files, Harry Potter, and Westworld. The best part about ordering from Loot Crate, when you check out, just type Daily Dose in the coupon box, DALYDOSE. We will get you 10% off of your order, and that just might help you get that Valentine's gift that you know you need to get and you're not sure what to get. Something a little bit different. You might be able to find it over at Loot Crate. They have a ton of things over there. Okay, we have got to talk just a little bit NFL. Because now we are through the wild card round of the NFL playoffs. Kind of got rid of some of those blowout games. We've eliminated now 24 teams, and we are down to the remaining 8. Any one of these teams, I guess, could win it, right? Like, you're still in it. If you're still playing, you have a chance. But, you know, every one of these teams is beatable. Make no mistake about that. And I know as we're heading into the divisional round this weekend, we're kind of looking at a few of these matchups and going, yeah, this might be a mismatch. This might be kind of an ugly weekend. I know the wild card weekend, some of those games looked like they might not be that great, but at least they looked even. Like Jacksonville and Buffalo didn't look like a wonderful matchup on paper, and it sure wasn't on the field, but it looked pretty evenly matched, and it ended up being evenly matched. Some of the games this week you look at and you go, I don't know. We might see some blowouts this weekend. We might see the favorites roll this weekend. Well, for the most part. But I'm telling you right now, every single one of these teams could get knocked off. Yes, even the big dogs could get knocked off this weekend. Let's go down and take a look at each one of these teams and see what just might happen to make these teams say,
oh.
First up, the Atlanta Falcons. You know, the Falcons were the final seed that made it in over on the NFC side. But when they played the Rams on Saturday night, their defense really, really rose to the occasion. And you could see that playoff experience really paying off for Atlanta. They looked more poised. Matt Ryan looked like the poised quarterback that he can be sometimes. The Atlanta Falcons defense stepped up and got red zone stops when they needed to. Atlanta didn't look like a juggernaut on Saturday, but they did what they needed to do to survive and advance. What could trip them up as they go in and now have to face Philadelphia this week? I'll tell you one thing that I would worry about if I'm Atlanta. Don't get away from that running game. You better keep running the ball. I know Matt Ryan can throw it all over, and I know you've got a lot of weapons. Make sure they keep feeding guys like Devontae Freeman. Because here's what Atlanta can't do. If they get away from that running game and they allow their opponents some more possessions, their opponents may run the ball on them. And if their opponents start grinding and pounding on them, Atlanta could be in some serious trouble. We saw them lose 3 games in a row earlier this year. Not shootouts, not high-scoring games. Other teams said, hey, we're going to punch them in the mouth. We're going to run it down their throat, and we think we can play keep away from that Matt Ryan offense. Atlanta has to stick with their running game. They've got to hold on to the football. Don't let other teams do that to them. Next up is the Tennessee Titans. The Titans were the worst team to get into the NFL playoffs. Let's make no mistake about that. Somehow they get in. They go to Kansas City. Kansas City kind of plays into their hands. Tennessee makes the plays down the stretch, and Marcus Mariota just comes up with clutch plays. I mean, when you think back to that game on Saturday, Mariota catching his own pass, Mariota making the block that sets up the game-clinching first down. Hey, what can you say? Tennessee got it done on the road in a tough environment. But one thing I would say about Tennessee as they head to New England this week, don't fall behind early like you did to Kansas City. Because if you do that to New England, you're going to be in some serious trouble. I don't think Tom Brady's going to let you off the hook. The Kansas City Chiefs might let you off the hook. Alex Smith might let you off the hook. Tom Brady won't. Tom Brady will stomp on your throat if you get down early. And here's the biggest thing. If you do get behind early, and you're down 3, you're down 7, you're down even 10, maybe 14, you have to keep running the football. Tennessee can't quit on their run game. That run game, let's be real clear, that's what they have going for them. They've got to run the ball. I don't care if it's Henry just running up the gut or if it's Mariota taking off and running on pass plays where they haven't accounted for the quarterback. Tennessee has to keep running the football. If they don't, they're going to be in trouble. Moving on to the New Orleans Saints. You know, the Saints kind of had to scrape past a scrappy Carolina team that was hoping to sneak into New Orleans and pull the upset. Saints somehow held on. They got stops when they had to. They made the big plays at the very end of the game when they had to get the stop. Here's the key for the Saints. Don't let that defense be on the field too long. You don't want to do that. You don't want to do that against Minnesota this weekend especially. Because if your defense is on the field for long amounts of time, and they were even a little bit on Sunday against Carolina, on the field for far too long, that's why that game was as close as it was. That Saints defense, it's better We know Sean Payton has had a hard time having a consistent, strong defense in New Orleans. It's better. It's not great. I know everyone's going to say, no, this defense is totally different. It's way better. It's improved. Secondary has gotten a little bit better, but slowdown on this Saints defense is great. If they're on the field too long, New Orleans could be in some serious trouble, especially against a team like Minnesota. Because Minnesota, they can run it, they can throw it, they can hurt you a lot of different ways. If I'm the Saints, I want to control the ball with that running game. I want to let Breeze just be accurate and take care of the football. No turnovers, hog the ball as much as you can. If they do that, the Saints are going to be right in it. If not, they might be saying,
oh.
Next up is the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jaguars win the Ugly Game of the Week award. They beat the Buffalo Bills 10-3 in a game that if you didn't see it, honestly, I'm a little jealous of you. I don't know what you were doing. Maybe you were doing some shopping. Maybe you had the honey-do list. I don't know what it was. I don't really care what it was. If you didn't see the Jacksonville-Buffalo game, I envy you because I watched it. I can't get that time back. Do you see what I'm saying? Like that time is not coming back. It's gone and it's never coming back. Here's the thing for Jacksonville. You better not have another week of Blake Bortles sucking like he did this last week. He threw for 87 yards. He ran for more yards than he threw. You can do that against a team like Buffalo that doesn't have the offense to do anything to you. You can't do that against Pittsburgh this week. Jacksonville had better run the ball effectively, and Blake Bortles had better hit a couple of open targets. Because if he doesn't, Jacksonville's going to be in serious trouble this week. Moving on to those Minnesota Vikings. When you look at the entire NFC picture, might be the favorite to get to the Super Bowl. Kind of crazy considering the Super Bowl is in Minnesota in their home stadium. They've got a chance. They've got a chance to be the home team in their home stadium in the Super Bowl. The biggest thing the Minnesota Vikings have to avoid in these playoffs, and especially this coming week against the New Orleans Saints, you can't turn it over. And do not let it come down to a kick. The Minnesota Vikings are a quality football team. They look like the best football team in the NFC right now. And I know that could change. The Saints are capable of beating them. If the Eagles can do some things, the Eagles are capable of beating them. Atlanta could beat them. There are teams over there that can beat the Minnesota Vikings, but Minnesota looks like the most complete team on the NFC side. Here's the thing that will equalize everything, though. If they turn the football over, you can't have the fumbles. You can't have Case Keenum interceptions. If you do that, the playing field is suddenly level. Where you had advantage and where you were running downhill, now the playing field is level. It's not the same anymore. Minnesota has to take care of the football. And again, you can't let it come down to a kick because we'd have no faith whatsoever in Minnesota kickers ever. Ever. You can think back to playoffs past Blair Walsh's and was it Gary Anderson's. Like you can't let it come down to a kick. Minnesota does that. They're going to be in trouble and they just might be left saying,
oh.
Next up, the Pittsburgh Steelers. What can Pittsburgh not do? Well, besides having to go to New England. If they have to go to New England, that's not the greatest situation for Pittsburgh. But the biggest thing for Pittsburgh, and we have seen them do this, they can't let their opposing team just run the ball on them. If the opponent goes crazy running the football against Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh's going to be in trouble. We saw Jacksonville do it to them earlier this year. Leonard Fournette had a huge day against Pittsburgh. We saw Chicago do it to Pittsburgh. Just ran the ball down their throat, and Pittsburgh couldn't do anything about it. With linebacker Ryan Shazier now out, does make you worry just a little bit. What if someone were just to run it down Pittsburgh's throat? I know it's Jacksonville. They won't be able to do it again, right? Right? I wouldn't think. Pittsburgh has to be tough against the run this coming week. Next up, another team will stay in Pennsylvania and go to the Philadelphia Eagles. What do the Philadelphia Eagles have to avoid so that they can survive and advance in these playoffs? Hey, I know all the talk is about Carson Wentz being out and Nick Foles not playing well. We talked a little bit last week about his quarterback rating right now. It is horrible. He's a statue back there. He doesn't move very well like Wentz did. He's not throwing very accurately. He looks very concerned about the pass rush. Here's the thing for Philly. Don't let it come down to Nick Foles. You have to have other people step up around him. Your defense has to make some plays. And you know, I think back to that Super Bowl 50 winning Denver Bronco team. Peyton Manning was a shell of himself. Denver couldn't score any points. So what happened? The defense scored some points. The defense put them in favorable positions. That's the same thing Philly's going to have to do. If they want to win any games in this postseason, don't put it on Nick Foles. Carson Wentz could win a game I don't want to say by himself, but he could carry them to a win. Nick Foles isn't that guy. Don't ask him to be that guy and then later say, I don't know what happened. You didn't seem like he was that guy. We know that going in already. Don't make it come down to Nick Foles, and Philly can still get a win and advance. Philly can still contend for the bowl if they don't make it come down to Nick Foles, but other guys have to step up. You've got to run the ball. You've got to make big-time catches, and your defense has to do something. Or you have to get some points from special teams, something. Don't make it come down to Nick Foles. Finally, the final team on our list, the favorite, 2-1 favorites to win the whole thing, the New England Patriots. What do the Patriots have to avoid besides the air pressure gauge? Oh. Hey, they can't let opposing offenses keep Tom Brady off the field. You know, the thing about the New England Patriots that we kind of forget, because you look at Brady and you think of Gronk and some of the weapons that he has back there, they generate so many offensive plays. Because you know what the Patriots do? They just rack up first down after first down after first down, and they put together these 8, 9, 10, 12 play drives and then score. And the biggest thing against the Patriots, you have to keep that offense off the field. You have to keep Tom Brady off the field, because otherwise they just eat you up and move the chains and move the chains. You can't let New England do that. And we saw against even Miami recently, against Jay Cutler recently, Miami ate up the clock and kept Tom Brady off the field. If you do that, New England could be left saying, "Go!" Hey, tomorrow is Wednesday, and you know we have some college football awards to hand out now that the college football season is over, so you know you have to tune in for that. Plus, we will have our weekly Daily Dose Hump Day Power Rankings. You've got to tune in for those as well. Have to say thank you so much for listening to the Daily Dose every day, and for all of you that share the show, that tell your friends, that email us, that text us or message us, we have to say thank you so much. It is appreciated. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Have a great Tuesday. I will see you all tomorrow.